Welcome to the London Welsh Rugby Club podcast. This is episode 44. Some rugby news at last on the RFU, and rugby will return to the club from week commencing March the 29th. This means that the minis and youth will be back at the club from Easter Sunday, and the senior squads will decide what is best for them to prepare for next season. We are looking at hosting a Ready for Rugby event at the club in April, so our seniors, Colts and Touch rugby teams can have some competitive rugby, all socially distanced and within the government guidelines. My guest this week is someone I've got to know really well over the years and followed his career with great interest when he left London Welsh after nearly 120 games. He has been at quite a few clubs, but really opens up about the precarious nature of professional rugby and some insights into contract negotiations. He is very passionate about coaching and was given the opportunity to start whilst at London Welsh, but has taken this onto different levels since he left, and especially whilst at Bath. He's a top fella and really delivered for London Welsh when we were in the Championship. Our guest this week is Alex Davis. Enjoy. This podcast is sponsored by London Welsh Developments. London Welsh Developments offer the entire range of services for all your home needs, from plumbing, electrical, joinery, and building and maintenance. Their many years of experience building all forms of extensions and conversions, the odd new build, and some bespoke garden rooms and home offices. You will clearly see the attention to detail and understanding of your home that is difficult to match. They really do care and want the best for your home with no stone left unturned. For more information, contact London Welsh Developments on 0208 335 9123 or email on info@lwdltd.co.uk, London Welsh Developments. Welcome to the pod, former London Welsh and Bath player, Alex Davis. How are you, Alex?
I'm good, thank you, mate. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. So we're hopefully on our last lockdown now in the UK from this pandemic. Where have you spent the last few months, Alex?
I've spent the last few months at my mother-in-law's house down in Forest Row, East Sussex. So we've bought, my wife and I bought a house in Tunbridge Wells, but it wasn't ready. So we've just spent the last few months here until it's finally ready.
24/7 with the in-laws. Gosh, that's not everyone's cup of tea.
It's been really good, mate. Get looked after really well.
Just in case they're listening, yeah, I know what you're saying. So look, but you've had lots of change across the last 12 months with your sort of your time at Bath coming to an end, and maybe you transitioning out of a full-time professional athlete to the real world. That this pandemic has made that more challenging, obviously. But how has that been, and how have you found it?
It was really tough at the start, mate. I was sort of coming into my last year at Bath, and they weren't really talking to me about, you know, there was never really going to be anything there next year, really. So I sort of knew it was on the card. But then when we got, I think it was March time, I think we got called in and was like, look, we're going to go into lockdown. I actually cleaned up my locker there and then, and pretty much took everything with me because I sort of knew I wasn't coming back. They weren't going to give me anything. So it was, that was tough. And then it was, the hardest bit was being in Bath, but for no real reason, because I couldn't train. Like, some of the boys were still training, not initially, but the boys sort of came back a couple of months later, and they were having their own home programs. And then they were going in groups, going into Farley House. And I was just in Bath, I think, from March till August, doing nothing really. So it was, I was doing my own stuff, obviously, but training-wise, that was tough because my mates were there, and, you know, normally you'd go for a coffee with them or you'd catch up, and it wasn't the same. So I really struggled with that, that side of it, really, when they all were all going back training, and I was just, you know, at home. But, you know, there was some plus sides to it, like, you know, my wife and I, we've always sort of lived a little bit apart because my rugby's always took me elsewhere, and she's got, you know, a really good job in London. So before lockdown hit, she moved to Bath. So we ended up spending, like, you know, a load of time together. We got a dog. So You know, that was, it was awesome in that respect. Cause we, you know, we could spend some time together, we could train the dog. And it also gave me a bit more time to focus on my business, really. So there were some plus sides to it.
Yeah, so it gives everyone a bit of opportunity for thinking time. So as you knew you're transitioning out, you then started looking for possibly other clubs to play for, you know, to continue that sort of full-time role, or maybe then maybe transition to part-time role. So so I bumped into you in the summer, I think, with Milty at Rostin Park, and you'd signed with Rostin Park as a player coach, is that right?
Yeah.
We people call it Rostin Park, but it really is like London Welsh Vets, isn't it?
Probably is now, yeah.
No, because Nick Scott's there, Seb Steckman, obviously the coach is Millsy. But were you signed to play there, but also with a sort of coaching role as well?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I didn't really play much my last 2 years at Bath, really, and I've still had that burning desire to play. I love that. I love the game day atmosphere. I just love playing, and I definitely hadn't had enough of it, and I needed to enjoy my rugby again. And I did look at some full-time options abroad, but like, you know, with the pandemic and most clubs were cutting costs, not bringing in, so it was just really difficult to find something. And it's really interesting because my middle brother retired at 29 early, and he had a way better career than me. You know, played over 150 games in the Prem, played out in France. And he retired early, so I always had an inkling that it was never really going to go that far in my career. It was always going to be a short career. So probably from the age of like 29, 30, I seriously, every year, I would apply for real world jobs, in inverted commas, because I never wanted to be left short. So I was applying for jobs in school when I was at Leeds. I just, you know, because it was just so uncertain in the championship. It was just, you know, although Yorkshire were really good looking after me, there was definitely some other clubs where boys were getting released for things that were just crazy. So I always knew that it was going to finish or could finish any moment. So I would apply for jobs. I'd say from like 29, 30, I was applying for jobs just so I'd get myself covered. And it was a similar situation in my last year. I'd always had an idea of transitioning from, you know, full-time pro to one day become a head of rugby at an independent school. So I'd always, alongside my career, kept in touch with schools, coached in schools. And an opportunity came about at Hurst Pierpoint College, which is one of the RPA guys got in touch with me about, and he was like, look, I think it could be a really good fit. It's down, you know, your wife's family way, and I think you should go and have a crack. So applied for it, went for an interview. And they were amazing. From the head of rugby there, Jack Emerson, was amazing with me from that day. And I sort of put that together with my Rostin Park. I'd still say semi-pro. I could still play a coach because I want to be a coach, and that's, you know, I want to be a professional coach and in the professional game. So that's the idea. But that was a really good transition period for me because there wasn't much. Okay, and I applied for a couple of jobs in you know, academies and didn't get them. And, you know, just that's tough to take sometimes, but it's the real world. There's so many people applying for these jobs. So I ended up getting the job at Hurst Pierpoint. And then I signed at Rostin Park, having spoke to like a couple of clubs abroad. And then the pandemic sort of really hit, and then it was really uncertain. The school weren't sure if, because I'm a professional rugby coach at Hurst Pierpoint. I don't teach, so it's pretty much a luxury for me to have me there. So, you know, if anyone's going to get cut, it's going to be someone like me. So I was really worried then that, you know, I'm going to be left here high and dry with nothing. So, you know, Jack Emerson, the head of rugby there, spoke to me probably, I'd say every 2 weeks we'd catch up, even when it was uncertain that I'd get the role. And he kept pushing for the school, you know, we need this guy and stuff like that. So, yeah, it all went ahead in the end. And I think at the start of August, I was still in Bath, not sure what I was doing. And they texted me saying, right, we're starting end of August. So I had to pack up and leave within a couple of days and move out of Bath and head down to, you know, my in-laws. And that's where I've been.
So you got, so you started coaching at school, and obviously then obviously there'd be no school for since January. So that's obviously challenging. No national one rugby for you to play or coach. I'm not sure how much pre-season you'd have done. You might have done bits and bobs July, August with Rossin Park, but it's National One clubs have had, been basically left, and so Championship really until this weekend.
Yeah, high and dry.
But yeah, it's there's a big thing around the RFU should be looking after the Championship a lot more than it has been, because a lot of players have had a lot of experience there and gone up and played international rugby. Look, we could spend an hour and a half talking about that. And
oh, I know.
I don't want to do that. I want to talk about you, Alex, right, Jimmy? So I'm glad you got yourself sorted as head of rugby at school and at Rossin Park. Right. And hopefully next season, then we'll see you playing at Rossin Park, and we'll obviously come and watch. You've also sort of reinvigorated your sort of AD elite kicking business, and with some high profile recruits, you've been coaching some of your ex Bath colleagues like Freese Priestland, Freddie Burns, Cameron Redpath, Orlando Bailey, all these sorts of up and coming guys in De Glanville. Yeah. That must be quite a coup for you. Obviously, they're your mates, but also you're helping them get better.
Yes, definitely, and that was one of the things that the lockdown and the pandemic sort of really pushed me into, was to really adapt and really start focusing on this business. And you were one of the first guys who helped me with my kicking business 8 years ago now, when I did my knee and I didn't really have much else to do. And I went down, you invited me down to London Welsh Minis on Sunday, and it sort of literally snowballed from there. And you were really integral in me getting in people and spreading the word about my coaching. And it was always just on the side, but never really fully gone into it. And the sort of lockdown was like, right, I'm going to need a website, going to need an Instagram page, because that's what everyone has these days. And that's what, gets the most traction and stuff like that. So it sort of pushed me into it, and it was awesome. I did some online sessions the first lockdown, adapting. And it was, it's gone really well. And as you said, the boys at Bath have been excellent with me. And probably the best thing about it was I never really approached those boys to help me, if you know what I mean. I was probably a bit too proud to do that. But because I had clients in the area which were keeping me going anyway, and different bits at schools here and there. But the boys at Bath, they sort of came to me. I remember Reese texting me being like, look, hey, mate, do you fancy doing some skills? I'm not in full training. I've got a bit of a niggle. I really want to work on this, and this. Do you fancy having, 6 to 8 sessions to sharpen me up? And I was like, yeah, amazing. So that was, really nice. And then, Sam Underhill was, asked me to go and do some skills with him. And it just sort of went from there, really. And then with some of the younger boys, like Tom de Glanville, Orlando Bailey, and, Cam, when I was at Bath, I sort of did that sort of stuff with them day in, day out anyway, because they had more of a chance of playing than me. So I was just like, right, where can I focus next? Because I'm not playing, I need to focus my energy somewhere else. So I get a real kick out of helping those boys. And since probably my first couple of months at Bath with Tom de Glanville, we were there, and then Orlando came in, Max Ajomo, they're always on hand to help those boys after training. Rory Mack, when he we sort of signed the same time at Bath, and he was transitioning from 7s to 15s. I helped him with his kicking game, positional stuff. And yeah, it's nice to have a hand in, sort of helping them. Reese obviously got the golden boot, and then he's just smashed the record, for the Prem most consecutive kicks. So it's so good, because I see how hard he trains. I see how hard he works on that. He's a perfectionist, so it's so nice to get him get those awards. And
it's funny, because I think when he's in Wales, that's probably seen one of his weaknesses, and then he sort of works with you, gets a golden boot, and gets a Premiership record. That's not bad for AD elite kicking, is it?
Yeah, I didn't have a hand in that. It's all Reese, that his work ethic, his attention to detail. And yeah, he had a bit of a tough time back in Wales. And I think even still at Bath, they weren't going to keep him on in my first year. And it was like, he's leaving. I couldn't believe it, because, you tend to be the biggest team player on the field, and there's no better team player than Reese. I promise you, he's so selfless, and everything he does is to help the team. And I thought they were making a big mistake. So I was really happy when he re-signed, even though it definitely cemented I was never going to play probably ever again. But I was happy because, you know, he's a really good guy and helped me a lot when I came in. So I was really happy for Reese. And I think, you know, he's still, you know, I don't think he gets the plaudits he deserves. And, you know, I think Bath fans just want a big, shiny 10. And that's going to solve the problems. And I just don't think it's that.
No, I get you there. But I just want to make it clear to our listeners, actually, you're not obviously coaching Premiership players. You're coaching up-and-coming kids. And you offer your services, you know, virtually at the moment to some clubs. So how do people get hold of you, Alex? And if they want to improve any of their sort of skill set, whether that's kicking or, you know, handling, things like that?
Yeah, so I do a rate. You know, it's obviously my business called AD Elite Kicking, but I offer skill, passing, decision-making stuff, a range of kicking, because I've obviously played 9, 10 and 15 in the Prem, so I can cover most kicking bases there. But yeah, I've got an Instagram page, AD_Elitekicking, which, you know, I get a lot of messages, people, you know, Abu Dhabi, Australia, all over the world, which is really nice. I've met some cool people through that, had some really nice conversations there.
You mentioned that. So you're actually on your Instagram page, you've now sort of launched a sort of on Instagram TV, which is like a, for those older people, it's just an element of Instagram where you can have longer length video, like a YouTube on Instagram, let's call it that for now, yeah. Right? But it's called Let's Kick On, about the mental side of kicking. And you've had some phenomenal guests on there, really. And, you know, which has been, you know, pretty, you know, amazing. So who have you had on and who have you enjoyed interviewing?
So I've had Reece Priestland, Freddie Burns, Callum Sheedy, Marcus Smith. I'm going to miss someone off. I know I had Carlos Spencer, which was just, for me, that wasn't about kicking. That was just getting a conversation with him because he was a hero of mine growing up. Which
were you a bit of a fanboy in interview though as well? We just like, honestly, just like grinning away.
The thing is, it was Saturday night here. So Sunday morning for him. And I'd had a few beers watching the rugby in the daytime. So, God, but it was amazing. It was so, so cool. Like, I think it came about because I had a chat with Freddie, and Freddie was saying, you know, when he grew up and his early days at Gloucester, Carlos Spencer was playing there. And he was the most skillful player he played with. So I sort of tagged him in the interview and he liked it, you know, messaged, followed, and it sort of went from there, really. And then, yeah, it was pretty cool. Marcus Smith was actually a really interesting one. For someone so young, like, I could just get his determination to improve was like off the charts just from that hour conversation. Like, yeah, I always have a bit of preamble with them before, you know, you do the thing, but his determination, like, he, you know, and after he sent a real nice message asking, you know, if I can watch his game and help him with some bits, and we've had back and forward since then. So, like, yeah, it's been amazing to speak to these guys, and, you know, like, someone like Reese was really helpful, and I've had some, in not kickers, I had a sports psychologist called Joe Dixon on there, and he helped me loads at Bath, because my second year I really struggled there, mentally not playing, and everything was, you know, we weren't up, yeah, it was just tough, and he really helped me trying to like control the controllables and, you know, really look at my game and have a more of a balanced reflection on my performance within training. So I can sort of get some small wins to make me a little bit happier, because it was really tough. So I owe him a lot, and it was amazing just to chat to him. Mitchell last week.
Oh yeah, I saw that. But it's like, it's great because, first thing, did Carlos Spencer talk about when you played at Old Deer Park, Northampton against London Welsh? Did he mention that at all?
He did. Because I don't think that wasn't on his list. I don't think.
We're about 3,500 ODP for that game, but that was pretty good. But both my boys have been coached by you since they were very early age, and both of them had a taster session in the summer, and they just said like they enjoyed how technical you got with them, and they're okay kickers for their age and stuff, and they really enjoyed how technical you got with them, so, and how you broke it down for them, and, you know, really enjoyed the session.
That's awesome. That's great feedback for me, you know. And as you said, I coach a range of people from under 10 minis, you know, at Rosslyn Park or Hammersmith and Fulham, to, you know, these boys that you see on TV. So it, you know, any feedback's good for me. But the biggest thing why I love coaching is because I wasn't the most talented player. and I know what I had to do, but sometimes I didn't have the ability to do it. And I've just found a way where I feel like I can connect with the person to coach them the stuff that I couldn't do. And some of these boys pick it up like that, and it's amazing. And yeah, I never had that top end ability, and that's why I was never a consistent, you know, regular in the team for Bath and the Premiership, because it was never that, I wasn't that level.
Well, that's not for me to say, but look, I know from a coaching perspective, I think you're a natural coach. You know, I think you stepped into that role when you were injured at London Welsh, and you know, you could see how you, the enjoyment you got out of seeing people grow, things like that. So I think
it's a
natural progression for your career now is to go as a coach. You know, and I'm sure it'll go to strength, and obviously, you know, seeing you coaching and talking to some of the best kickers in the world and best tens in the world. You know, that's just great for you and your profile, and hopefully it just goes from strength to strength. Just before going on to your career, though, who would your dream guest be then now on your Let's Kick On IGTV series?
Oh, God. I tell you what, I'm quite close to getting Quade Cooper, which would be a pretty good one. So I'm trying to ask a few people you've contacted, so I'm trying to get there. So someone like him, or like, you know, Dan Carter, obviously, he's just retired, so it'd be class to get him, but that's a very long shot. So I think one of those two, really. I think a lot of people would expect me to say Johnny Wilkinson, but obviously he's was an incredible player. But I like the Southern Hemisphere rugby and the style, and I'm always really interested in the mindset, because I think they're two different mindsets, Southern Hemisphere to Northern Hemisphere players. So, probably Quade Cooper or Dan Carter would be the best.
Okay, I'm sure it'll happen once, you know, the thousands, tens of thousands. obviously we'll tag them in, because they're big fans of this podcast, I know that. But so, you know, see, probably rugby wasn't your first love, I don't imagine. So I imagine you're quite a big football fan. You're from Chester, so you obviously support Chester. Yeah.
No. Oh. You know. No. Big Liverpool fan.
Big. Sorry to hear that. But obviously, they don't win the league for years, and they win it with no fans when they're there. So that's very unfortunate.
Typical, isn't it?
So when did you realise maybe football, you weren't going to make it a football? Because that really is a tough sport to make at a top level, and realise you had some talent in rugby. When did you realise, you know, you thought you'd focus more on rugby?
You're right. Rugby, football was first for me, and I didn't really. My two older brothers, my oldest brother was a football player, my middle brother was a rugby player. So I was sort of doing both, watching those. I used to go and watch my brothers all the time, and football sort of kicked off for me earlier, which it does. You know, you see like Man City under sevens, and you know my nephew's at Liverpool under five. You know, under fives, under six now. It's crazy. But I was at Crewe Alexander for a couple of years, Liverpool, Tranmere, and when I got released from Crewe, I think I was 11 or 12, they told me I wasn't fit enough, and I was 11 or 12. I didn't have a clue what even meant by it, you know? And the coach then was Steve Holland, who's now England's number two, Gareth Southgate's number two. So he was the coach then, and a few boys have gone on from that team to make it. Nicky Maynard was playing for Bristol, I think he was Bristol Rovers, and nothing like big. But then when I went to secondary school, we didn't play football. It was a grammar school, which was cricket, and rugby was the main sport, and athletics. So football was, as I was getting older, the people that I was playing against weren't really that nice. And rugby was good. My middle brother at the time was sort of like, was going away with the World Cup with England, which I was like in awe of. So obviously my secondary school didn't play football. The people at the weekend weren't very nice. I was playing against, you know, threatening to break my legs after the game and chase me and all that sort of stuff. It was bizarre. So I sort of just like fell out of that. I didn't want any of that. Even though rugby is a more physical game, but it's controlled physicality. So I was I sort of went down that route, and do you know what? I didn't even make any county teams. I was in the squad, but never played. I was on a bench. I remember my mum taking me all over the country. I must have got a couple of minutes at the end. out of about three games, and she said, right, we're not doing this again. So I didn't play any counter rugby, just played school rugby. And my brother then signed from Harlequins to Sale. And I was just thought, right, that's it. Rugby's not really an option for me. I'm going to go to university, be a PE teacher and play a bit of rugby just for a laugh. Even though I was still 100% dedicated to rugby. Yeah. I'd train, I'd practice so much. I'd skip university, you know, to go and practice. I used to love it. I absolutely loved rugby. I never drank, didn't drink till I was like 22. I was just so dedicated to my rugby. Even though it wasn't really going anywhere, I sort of at school, my senior years at school, I was at Birkenhead Park playing first team there, which was an eye-opener. Trust me, it was rough. As
so you were 16 playing senior rugby?
No, 17 playing senior rugby, 17, yeah. 18 playing senior rugby at Birkenhead Park. And they were a great club, but it was rough as anything. And it, you know, you're playing against firemen who just want to play and fight at the weekend. And there's a skinny little me, and I'm tiny anyway. But they looked after me. We had a tough coach called Sean Gallagher, who's a policeman, big second row, hard second row, and he's now the sighting officer for the RFU, which I find really interesting. He was one of the dirtiest players I ever played with, and I was thank God he was on my team.
I think it's all the wrong ones. I think all the wrong ones are the RFU sighting officers, though. There's quite a few of them, I think. I'm not going to name names.
Yeah, of course.
So you ended up at the Sale Academy, didn't you? Somehow. So how did you get into there?
From there, well, my brother signed to Sale, and then I was just like, look, do you reckon they'll be able to? I'll be able to come and play some of the Jets games. Or get me in. So we spoke to them. They were like, yeah, like, come down, we'll have a look at you. So from I trained my last year at school, I played a few games with Sale Jets, which is like the A-League sort of thing. And it was amazing. I'd go to like Quinn's away and play, and I'd get all this kit. And I was like, this is it. This is what I want to do. So it just fueled it a bit. And then got to a point where I went to university in Liverpool. They weren't going to offer me like an academy contract essentially, but even though I'd been training for 2 to 3 years on and off and playing, I was just a bit like, well, what am I going to do? So I got an offer in New Zealand to go and play for North Otago. So I took a year out of uni. So I did 2 years at university, took a year out, went out there.
How does that come about? Sorry, though. How do you get a connection in New Zealand? Did you chase it, or just like through friends or through contacts?
Bit of both. So the year before I went out, two lads from the Wirral, my area, had been out to play, and they'd played for Birkenhead Park and then New Brighton, which my brother played, and they were a year below my brother, so I roughly knew them. So I just said, oh, you know, how did you get that? And he was like, oh, I just, you know, I sent out some CVs. And so I was like, oh, you know, can you give me the details? So spoke to them. He then, you know, they did some research on me, and they were like, yeah, like, we're really keen. We'll pay for your airfare. We'll give you a job accommodation. And you can come and play some, like, it was called AA Heartland Championship then, but like the NPC, but a little bit lower, like a more regional level of the NPC. So, that was amazing. I was there for 8 months, and it was the best thing that ever happened to a rugby career.
So you played every week sort of thing, yeah? And then you worked?
Yeah, every week. I lived and worked at a school in a dorm master. Tom Wood, who obviously plays Northampton, was out there at the same time, so we were in the same team together. So he's a good friend, still a good friend now, but you know, we were like the English boys over there, which was really good. And it was amazing. It was just like they live and breathe rugby. You know, when New Zealand played at the weekend, it was on in the cinema. Like, it was just crazy. It was just people were so polite, and I was just like, right, I'm not coming back home. So I emailed my mum and dad to say I'm not coming home, and I want to stay. And it didn't really materialize. And my mum was like, get home, finish your degree. So I failed a few exams before I went, so I had to come home, try and finish that.
Wasn't Ben Smith in that team as well, though, Alex? Wasn't the old black player?
That was the next.
The next time you went over. Okay, sorry.
Yeah.
But did that sort of make you fall in love with rugby in terms of like the standard, even though the level you're playing at,
it was amazing.
So high.
Honestly, it was so good. I was playing for my club team, was called Athletic, and it was full of Islanders. It was honestly, I was the only white guy in the team. But it was amazing. I learned Tongan, I learned Samoan. It was honestly, I just completely went for it. And it was amazing. We had Mike Mullins, who was the coach, who played for Ireland and Munster. He was the coach over there.
Did you have to learn Samoan and Tongan because they couldn't understand your Scouse accent? Is that what it was?
Probably, yeah. It's probably easier me speaking Tongan and Samoan than trying to speak English. But they were amazing. And still from that day, I've got mates from that day. Like, there was a guy that I was looking after in the dorm who was in his last year at school, went on to play Canterbury, Kieran Moffat. You know, he's one of my best mates still now. And that's going, bloody hell, 15, 16 years ago. So it was just amazing, like the whole mindset and friendly people. And I just didn't want to come home. I emailed my mum and dad, said I wasn't coming home. And then, yeah, I actually come home and tried to finish it. I ended up being a year behind, not enjoying my university. Literally, I was just basically waiting for a professional contract if I could get one. So I went back and played for Waterloo, which was National One.
Yeah.
At the time, which was good. I was playing in the Championship. I remember we played Leeds away. We got a tonking, we got a beast in most weeks, but we played like Leeds, Exeter, and yeah, we just got an absolute pasting. But I remember Graham Dorr rang me from Plymouth Albion, and he was like, look, I like what I see, really good goal kicker, it's exactly what we need, we've got a massive pack, would you be interested? And I said, no, I need to finish my degree. So I played a bit more, and he rang me at the end of the season again. I was like, look, you fancy it? So I said, you know what, I might not get this chance again. So I took it, completely moved down there, and then, yeah, did 3 years there. And in the off season, I went back to New Zealand to play. But I went down to like Otago that time, and that's where I played with Ben Smith and Nasi Manu in just club rugby. It was bizarre. You had like, and Ben Smith was in the sevens, New Zealand sevens at the time. And Nasi Manu was in out of the Highlanders. So was Ben. And you'd play with them on the weekend. I'd have Nasi Manu at eight, you know, a farmer at nine, me at 10, and then Ben Smith at 3. Honestly, it was just, everyone came together and it was amazing.
That's
was
New Zealand rugby, because if they don't play for their, like, the super rugby territories, then play for their local clubs, don't they? They always, like, filter down. Yeah, to the, they just want a game. Like, they just want
to
play, don't
it's
they?
It's a complete different mindset over there to rugby. Like, if remember Cookie was at Bath and came on loan to London Welsh. You know, and it, like, he embraced it, but people think, oh, bloody hell, I'm going on loan. But if you look at All Blacks now turn out for club rugby if they're not getting any games, because they just love it. Like, they're proud to play for it. It's a big, real big community feel for it. Whereas
do you think over here it's now seen as a job at the top level and not as much, because they've come through academies and not their local clubs and this sort of thing. And it's like, they don't sort of feel like they want to sort of, at the end of their career, go back to sort of local rugby and play and sort of give back. It's quite a punishing playing professional rugby, isn't it? You know, so it's
definitely. But
people fall out of love with it.
There's no real academy systems out there. It doesn't really work like that. Like, you play for your club and you get picked. You get picked to then potentially represent or go for trials at the Highlanders or, you know, the wider squad. So if you do make it, like, your local club is what got you there and your school. So that's why there's so much like connection there. And they'd love, you see Ardie Surveyor going back to his club playing. You know, these boys, they love it. And Dan Carter went back and played for his club. You know, it's so good to see. Like, they're not above that, you know, whereas some people definitely this side of the world probably would not do that.
It's a bit like Tom May's last game of rugby was for London Welsh, isn't it now? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I would love to see...
I've got a funny story about that.
And Mike Denby came back, by the way, to play for us, you know, a couple of games.
I know, I saw that. And Nick Scott, I think...
Nearly got a red card in his first tackle, did Mike Denby, but nothing changes. But look, I think when you went to Plymouth, though, that was really the making of you, is because that was a Championship club, Graham Dawes, a renowned coach, quite a character by all accounts, sort of, you know, as a coach. So help you maybe, you know, in terms of your coaching career, because you've had lots of different coaches. But what's it like, though, being in that environment? So, you know, from sort of part-time National One with Waterloo to a more established sort of club at Plymouth for a young lad from, like, you know, the Wirral.
It was a bit of an eye-opener. Like, I don't think I didn't play much my first year, but I think Graham signed me knowing that I needed to get up to speed and then I'd be good for the second year. So he didn't play me much. He selected me every now and again. I was obviously you know, distraught not playing, but looking back, I was nowhere near ready. Physically, I wasn't ready because the championship then, even that, like the rules back then, God, I remember Paul Tupai from Bedford just laughing at me on his ruck and me held a ruck. You know, like it was just a complete different game back then. And Graham was, you know, I learned a lot from Graham, and we actually clashed a lot as player coach because, you know, he was a very much 10-man game. This is how we're going to win the game. And I wanted to play more. And, you know, we had to find that balance. And, you know, but my kicking stats, you know, for Plymouth were really good. And, you know, I think back then they had a top eight and a top four. And your top four went into a playoff. And I think I kicked like 42 out of 48 kicks in the last six games or something like that. And it was like, we stayed up, we played Birmingham Moseley, kicked 20-odd points, we beat them, we ended up staying in the league. I remember the next day Graham ringing me and I was like, oh my God, what have I done? And he was like, well done. Well done yesterday. Really, really good. And to get that off Graham was just like...
You were their record point scorer that season. You got like over 250 points.
Yeah.
So you would have kept him in the league. He
has this demeanor about him that you want to impress him. You want to show him how good you are. And he keeps you on that, you know, dangles the carrot for you to be. And he did. He did every time. And we'd boil over. We had some fights in training. You know, he was a hard man. And he would join into training. You know, we were playing extra at the weekend. And they had Richard Pugh, who's all over the ball. In training, Graham Dorr would grab a pad and would just kamikaze dive and kill the ball. And if you didn't go in and fill him in the breakdown and kick him out, then he'd be like, what are you doing? Like, you're soft. And he'd come up blood everywhere. And he'd do it for an hour because that's what the team needed to win the game at the weekend. And so stuff like that. Now, as I get old, I'm thinking of like the stuff that he was doing. Like, he'd walk on top of the scrum on a scrum machine. It's just, after training, they'd scrum. One team would scrum, the other team would stand on the machine, and he would walk on top of the scrum. And he's like, we're going to hold for 10 seconds. And he'd go, 10, 9.5, 9, honestly. Yeah. And it was just relentless. But he did like six jobs at that club, and they owe him a lot. He did, pretty sure most of it for free, mate. He was just a phenomenal bloke.
Unconventional then, shall we say, yeah.
He was very unconventional, but I love it. He's a character. Same with Lynn, Jimmy Lowe's. You know, those characters of coaches, they've like shaped me in a way of how I sort of coach and see the game now, which is amazing.
We also had 3 years at Plymouth, and you met some great people there. Was Mike Denby there when you were there?
Mike Denby was there when I was there. So I've known Mike Denby for a long time, and Liam Gibson, who obviously followed up to Welsh as well a bit later on.
Yeah.
So I've known Dennis for a long, long time, and another incredible player who really get the look of the green at the top end of the game, and a few injuries, and then, you know, like I think the realization of real world hit him earlier than some people. So he then was working a lot. You know, I remember living with Denby, and he was up at 6 a.m. going to the city on his days off just to, you know, get those contacts. So he's very good at networking, Mike Denby. Very good at networking. You tell Mike Denby that's the CEO of a certain company, and within 10 minutes, he'll be over there. Just the way he is. You know, he's
probably great why he wasn't talking to me then, isn't it, really? But you also met Ben Mercer as well, didn't you, at Plymouth? And I've read his book, Fringes. Yeah. And I just like, I'd love someone to write a book about that, about the championship. You know, the stories around the championship. I love the championship. Yeah. And
keep your eyes and ears peeled, pal.
For your second book,
Oh, well.
Or someone else.
I think Ben's on the, you know, Ben's doing some things for you know, I don't want to.
Yeah, no, that's
too
his,
much, but
it's,
he's,
no, it's his view,
he's got
so,
lots of things in the pipeline, but he is, you know, I lived with Ben for 2 years, and he's a great friend, and he's now helping me with some of my business, because he's now doing some websites and some digital stuff, so, you know, we FaceTime or we speak on Zoom every other week. And he's a funny one, because when I was in New Zealand for the second time in Plymouth, he moved in to my flat that I was in, and I had taken the ensuite off Liam Gibson, because Liam had the ensuite. He moved out, so I moved into the ensuite, and then Ben was taking the spare room. So I remember ringing him in New Zealand, and he was like, mate, I've moved all my stuff into the ensuite because I couldn't get my cupboard in. And I was like, what are you doing? Like, I'm doing you a favor here by giving you a room, and you've just took the ensuite. And anyway, I came home and all my stuff was in my room, and he'd moved fully into the ensuite. So,
but yeah, so for people listening, he's like, obviously he wrote a book called Fringes, which is about his rugby journey in France, and it's quite an interesting read to see, well, because it's not about the top level of rugby in France, but about the journey he took with Ruin. But look, we're not here to talk about him. You then went from Plymouth to come to London Welsh. So how did that move materialise for you, Alex?
So my last year at Plymouth, I thought I'd played pretty well and my kicking stats were really good. I kicked a load of points. So I was looking to potentially move on from Plymouth and trying to get higher up the league. And, I had an agent at the time and he was trying to, get ridiculous amounts of money out of Plymouth, which was not going to happen. And Graham said straight away, no, you need to lower your expectations, which I was like, look, I'm happy in playing. Like, just give me a bit more and I'll be okay to do another year, 2 years anyway. So, my agent went back 2 weeks later and was like, look, okay, what are you willing to offer? And he's like, it's gone. And he's like, what do you mean? He's like, oh, I told you it's too much. So I've now given it to Bevan Armitage. He's going to come down. I've given that Alex's contract to Bevan Armitage. And I was like, you're joking. He's like, no, like, you have to find another club. So I ended up not finding another club. I moved home I packed up, moved home, did some labouring for a couple of months. And Graham rang me back and was like, I was looking to sign for people like Fylde, who had a mate there and was going to get a job with the RFU and do some like development coaching and play for Fylde. And that was what was on the card to me. And then Graham rang me and was like, oh, look, we've got a bit of money left. It's basically half my contract that I'd originally been on. Do you want to take it? And it's my only full-time option. So I was like, do you know what, Graham? Yeah, I will. I'm absolutely devastated. You've cut my money in half after what the season I've just had. But I back myself to play well and get a better contract. So yeah, I'll do it. And I was raging inside, but I needed to play. I needed to stay on the full-time scene. So I was in the car, packed my bag, driving down the motorway, and another agent of mine who had left, and he rang me and said, oh, what are you doing? Have you got a club? I was like, mate, you wouldn't believe. I'm just going back to Plymouth on, half the money. And he was like, well, London Welsh, you're looking for a 10 if you fancy it. And I was like, yeah. He's like, can you meet them today? And I was like, yes. So I literally, on the motorway, deviated straight to London Welsh, met them. Spoke to Steve Lewis. Met them, and within a couple of days, and a couple of Steve Lewis bargaining tools, I think it would, they'd offered me something, and I rang Graham and was like, look, I'm not coming down. I've got a meeting in London Welsh. They're really keen. They offered me a contract. I rang Graham. I was like, look, I do appreciate you giving me the opportunity, but obviously London Welsh is a really good club. And the money wasn't too dissimilar, if I'm honest. It wasn't dissimilar at all, but yeah, I reckon with the squad they were building. And that was that, really. I literally just deviated, slept in my brother's front room for probably a month until I ended up moving in with, Mike Denby, Ed Jackson, Billy Moss and Will Hurrell.
What a gang that is. So that year, the championship then, because that's the only season you would have played at Old Deer Park. That season, we got promoted, isn't it? I think that's with Lynn Jones, isn't it? That's the first season. Yeah. So that was Lynn's first season at the club as well. Our promotion season. And, do you remember who you made your debut against at all?
No.
It was at Sunbury. Let's look at your league appearance then. Your first league appearance was against your old team.
Plymouth?
Yeah.
Was it?
Yeah. We won 34-23, and you came on as replacement to kick the conversion. But do you know what? You played 28 out of 32 games in the league that season for London Welsh. So loads of consistency, and the 34 games in total. Do you know what I mean? So, and another 250-point season for you. Not bad, eh?
Yeah, it was. I loved it, honestly. We had a great team, and you know, Steve Lewis assembled like he's a shrewd man. He's very good at what he does, and people like Ed Jackson and picking people up here and there. And we had a great squad, and we were winning. And obviously Gordon Ross there at 10, and I think I was playing 15 for most of the season. And my goal kicking sort of kept me in the team really. And it was really good because Lynn was a really smart coach and I loved playing for him. Like, he was so fun. Training was fun. He had smart, real crafty ideas, which just really engaged everyone. And, you know, we had Hudson in the centres and I can't think of it. Watling and Mackie and James Lewis in the centres as well. So they were obviously, you know, big runners. And me outside them, I wasn't the most physical or quick, if not, at 15. So I played like a second receiver. So Gordon would be 10. We'd have forwards off Gordon and I'd be on the back of the forwards as a second distributor. So I'd have Hudson and James on the wider channels punching the holes. And that's how we played it. And it was amazing. I loved it. I had so much freedom. Me and Gordon got on really well. We had a great relationship. And I just really enjoyed it.
No, it's quality because you made your debut with Ed Jackson, Seb Jewell, Mike Denby, Jack Moat, and Billy Moss. That was your first Jack appearance Moat for the club.
Yeah.
But he was a blast of the past. He played 9, didn't he, for a bit? Is that right?
Yeah, he did. Yeah. He came from London Irish. Yeah. Great guy, Jack.
Well, I think that season we had Marlon Yard on loan for a little bit and Max Laheath and things like that. So, so it's amazing, like all these people who've come in and dipped out of London Welsh. But obviously, the people who stayed for quite a while, like yourself, you had 4 seasons there, right? And so, you know, we as you said, you played 2/3 of your season at fullback. We won we went up, right? You were kicking the points against Pirates, the Kassam. Do you know what I mean? So, what was it like that season, though? Because, you know, the disappointment of not going up and then you're going up, it must be quite a...
It was... To be honest, I never thought we'd go up. I didn't think... Like, I think there was just, you know, too much of a gap between the Prem. There was no connection. There was no, like, Championship, Premiership. Like, it was always very separate. And, you know, the RFU, I think, were dead set on not having us up there, even though there was a promotion and relegation. But yeah, like it was just, I was sort of in a groove in my kicking. The team were playing really well. And I've got some great memories. Pirates away. I remember the RFU announced we weren't going up on that day. And, you know, I don't think Pirates had lost at home all season. Or, you know, they had some incredible record down there, which they always do because it's a really tough place to play. And they start really fast, you know. They had some amazing players and some great squads over the season, you know, over the years who've gone on to play Premiership. So I think we took them the cleaners. We absolutely wiped them out. And I think it did spur us on to be like a big 2 fingers up to the RFU a little bit and be like, right, well, you know, we're here. We're ready to go up. And then we beat them at home as well. And it was just, it was amazing. Even, you know, even if we didn't go up, the celebrations of winning something, winning the league, like you don't often win things in rugby. Honestly, you don't. It's the only 2 things I've won is London Welsh getting promoted twice in my career. I've not won much else really. I got close with Leeds. We got beat by London Irish in the final to go back to go up, which would have been a hat trick of promotions. But just the celebrations and like, you know, all those people are still friends now. Chris Jenkins, you know, speak to him every now and again and stuff like that. So, and Lynn, I speak to Lynn, you know, quite a bit. So
it's those memories really, isn't it? It's not, you know, it's the games are the games, but it's the games allow you to have those memories and those bonds with people, 100%. Don't they? But then, so obviously we got the Premiership. We have, an interesting season with Lynn and the Premiership. You know, we do really well, but obviously you then see us, we have like Gordon Ross there, you know, we sign Henson. So what goes through your mind there? You've got us into the Premiership, then you see, you know, people like Gavin Henson come, who's like obviously done it at the top end, but we're giving him another start in his career. Do you think that's great competition for places? Do you think, oh shit, you know, I'm going to be,
bit of both, but Lynn was really good with me. Lynn brought me into the office and was like, look, we're going to sign Gavin Henson. He's obviously Gavin Henson for one, and we're going to need some big players if you want to stay in the league, and you're definitely part of my plans. So, like, you know, he was really good with me the way he dealt with it. And I knew we needed to get, a group of boys were leaving, and it made sense that we needed to get, you know, we got Frank and all these boys in, and Briggsy, and, you know, some real, like, tough players. Like, you know, I think Borg One folded and we capitalized, we got the whole front row. So I sort of knew it was going to come, but the fact that he kept me because he saw me in his plans, I was happy with that because I knew I was still going to get some game time. I knew my goal kicking would force me to be in the team because we needed to win games. So I sort of knew I'd have a hand to play in some games. And yeah, it was tough. It was still tough because I don't think I made my debut until quite late on. And after the final of the champ final, I tore my adductor off the bone, so I was out for a couple of months anyway. So I missed the first couple of months of the Prem season. Made my debut against Sale.
Yeah, at home.
At home. And I was actually playing with Gav, and I got given the kicking duties. So it was like, which was really a big compliment from Lynn and Gav. And Gav was amazing. You know, we kicked together a fair bit, and he was amazing to play with. So it was tough, but then I then played a couple of European games at 15, and I wasn't at 15 at that level. I wasn't quick enough. I wasn't tall enough to get in the air. And, you know, I remember Lynn telling me that, look, you're not going to play. You're not going to play from now on, like, really. I don't see you being a first-choice Premiership 10, and you're not playing well at 15. So, and that, I was devastated. I was like, bloody hell, that's me done. And then we had some, like, freak injuries to nines. And he was just like, I said to him, I think Tony Hanks had come in at the time, who'd from Wasps, he was come over. And I was like, look, I can play nine. I played at school. So I trained a few times at nine. I felt really comfortable and easy there. And I think I played against Prato at home or someone at nine. My next game was Stade Français away. And Harlequins at nine, and I played three really good games. I mean, my best game was against Stade Français. I kicked everything, a few, like one assist, played it, scored against Prato. So I was just like loving it. I was then in the team then because I could play 9, 10, 15 goal kicker. So if I wasn't starting, I was benching. So I was an option. And yeah, didn't play as much as I'd like, but I was still involved, which was the best thing for me. I just wanted to be involved in it.
Looking at Waterloo, right, 4 or 5 years earlier, you're now playing Premiership rugby. And you made 17 appearances for the Welsh that season, right? So, you know, across the different competitions, that's a lot of games still. You know, it may not be all of them from the start. But, yeah, yes, you know, we go down the Tyson Keats issue, all this sort of thing. But, you know, it was a great adventure, you know. So if you're still in touch with Gav, by the way, tell him, like, he's got to wait his bide his time to get onto this podcast, okay? So just tend to be patient, so we'll get to him, okay, at some point.
I will. I'm trying to wait. I'm getting an invite to his pub there.
Yeah. But then, obviously, we get relegated. Lynn goes, Justin comes in, win the championship again. And, you know, you have another strong season, really, in the championship for London Welsh. You know, you play, obviously, we play at the Kasam. Not bit of a ghost town really with a couple of thousand there.
Yeah.
It's not the same as a Prem, but still a great, you know, great season. You know, what are your memories of that sort of second season, the championship for you, really, for London Welsh?
Second season was, it was good, like very different coach, Justin, to Lynn. I wanted to play, I think, because I'd had the previous year, I'd played pretty well at nine. I was like, right, I can actually progress here at nine. I wasn't going to be first choice Premiership 10. I wasn't good enough. I know that. So I thought that when looking around the league in the Prem, everyone had a big name 10, you know, but the nines weren't as big names really. And it was just like, if you've got good service, understand the game, box kick, then, you know, and I thought I had decent service. My kicking game was pretty strong, box kicking. And I felt I was a bit of an energizer. I used to, you know, love pumping the boys up. And so I thought that's where I could play. And Justin wanted me to go and play 15, you know, which was, you know, I'm still playing. He had Rob Lewis there, who he thought was, you know, the nine. And Ollie Frost came in, who's a great guy, and he had it tough there as well. And obviously, later on, Piri came in at nine. But yeah, it was good. Well, I mean, again, Justin and Steve Lewis brought in another, recruited really well. You know, like Carl Kerwin.
Yeah.
Lockie, was it Lockie or Lockie coming in a year after? We had Mitch Lees, Ollie Steadman, like Steggers, Reese Crane, Al Alcock. Like, we had big.
Did Tristan Roberts come as well, didn't he? Was Tristan there as well?
Tristan was there. We had Pete the Meat, we had Trevi. Honestly, and they were great blokes. Corker ran the line out, and like, we had a massive pack, like Mitch, a Petty, like, you know, like, these, we had a, and Justin, like, we bulldozed teams out the way, and, you know, you played the bigger ones like Bristol, and, you know, they had all the British Irish Lions, and, you know, what Justin did really well was he instilled not a hatred for Bristol, but a definite, like, we don't like them. You know, we'd have quotes, they'd be saying stuff in the press, and Justin would be telling us, and it just built up, because you think Justin knew that, you know, it's going to be between us and them who would go up. So, you know, he played on everyone's emotion really well, which was, you know, what Justin is good at doing. And I remember there was just like hatred that, you know, you wanted to batter Bristol, and it's just the way it was. And we beat them.
Well, we were lucky though. We were lucky because we were unlucky for you. You got injured playing in the semi-final against Leeds, so didn't get the opportunity to play in the final.
Yeah.
But when Leeds didn't make it, that home semi-final against second leg of the semi-final against Leeds, blinking heck, that was a knife edge, wasn't it?
I remember those two games were amazing. They were so good. Like, yeah, I remember playing 15 that day, got a kick from the halfway at Headingley, and then 5 minutes later stepped and snapped my ACL, and that was it. And I then on the sideline for the home leg, but the boy Glenn, ten at Leeds, who then came London Welsh or Ealing or whatever, he's out in Hong Kong.
Glenn Hodges.
No, not him.
Okay.
Glenn is anyway, but he kicked 10 out of 10 kicks that day, and I was like, bloody hell, it's going to be tough game at home. And he had a shocker at Kassam, and Gordon was just chipping him over from everywhere. It was amazing, and it was like a hell of a game. Like, we got it, we were pretty lucky, but I remember the sun was shining, it was like a hell of a game.
Yeah, it was a heart and mouth sort of thing as a London Welsh fan myself watching that game. But we get to the final, and we obviously beat Bristol across two legs, but everyone knows that, you know, their last game Memorial. But just great times, as you say, you win something again with that squad. But the injury you had in the semi-final just meant that the next season, the Premiership, when we had recruited other players, you know, we'd sort of, Justin and London Welsh had let go of the squad who'd got us there and recruited lots of new players and won those faces with Piri Wupu. And we maybe didn't see the best of him from a playing perspective, but I remember talking to you, Alex, at the time, and you said, what a great lad he was in the training environment, and how much you all got out of him being there.
Oh yeah, you'd be stupid not to. Like, you know, he's a New Zealand international, and he was amazing with everyone. He had so much time for everyone. I remember he would come on days off, I'd text him, and he'd come and give me a skill session. And, you know, I still use some of the stuff now, and I'm coaching boys that he taught me there and then, and he was amazing. We still speak. You know, we've got a bit of a WhatsApp group there with like Scurry and Lockie and you know, Piri Wipu, Eddie, all those boys that we've, you know, Tristan, Al, Carl Kerwin, like, you know, from that year, we've still got a WhatsApp group. So we still speak, which is really, really nice.
But you must have pinched yourself though. Sorry to interrupt you, Alex, but you must have pinched yourself when Justin says, sit down, lads, but we've signed Piri Wipu.
Yeah, I know. I actually didn't believe it, but I think remember Carl Kerwin told me actually, and I was like, shut up, whatever. But yeah, it was true. And we had signed Ollie Barkley as well, who was very, very smart player, very, very clever guy, very knows the game inside out. And I learned a lot from Ollie as well, like, really smart player.
All these star names, though, again, you know, just shows how tough the Premiership is, isn't it? We sign all these great players. we just unfortunately didn't win a game that season. You were injured for like half of it. It's just disappointing. So I think, you know, looking back, like, you know, being there at London Welsh 4 years, and then, you know, for whatever reason, we don't need to go into that now, is, you know, that you then signed for Ealing just because, you know, they offer you a playing contract, you know, and you have a year at Ealing, and Ealing were on the way up. You know, it's hard to believe they could be, you know, it's them or Saracens really for a place in the Premiership this season. They've invested quite a lot. You know, it's, you know, did you get a sense of that when you were there? That thing had like a 4 or 5 year plan?
Definitely, the year I signed there, you know, Ben Ward's got, you know, he's a very ambitious bloke, and he had aspirations for the club to transition because they were part time, and he wanted to go full time, and he had the backing, you know, from the trail finders guy, and he really wanted to develop it, and I was just a year along in that transition from we need to stay in the league and we're going to go good, you know, we're going to just keep moving this train on. And as you see now, they've got huge squad facility, really good facilities, you know, still lots of backing financially, a massive academy. I enjoyed my year at Ealing. Like, I think I needed it. I was just a little bit unhappy at the end of London Welsh and how it all came about. And there was some amazing people there, like Bledin, who looked after me. And, you know, it just sort of happened that, you know, I didn't really want to leave London Welsh, if I'm honest. I would have stayed, but it just happened. And, you know, Ealing offered me a deal. And I was like, look, I've had a few injuries this year. I'd actually nearly signed for Harlequins for 2 years. I went to meet Conor O'Shea and we played. He rang me, because Ollie Smith was coaching at Welsh at the time, and he rang me on must have been a Sunday morning, and was like, look, we're really keen. Wanting to come over, we'll have a little chat if you're interested, and we'll go from there. And I think we had an in-house game against the Dragons. And I think actually that was a Friday, we played Dragons, and I was going to meet Harlequins on the Sunday, and on the Friday, I snapped my MCL in the game, in this bloody training game against Dragons. And I rang him after, I was like, look, I've snapped my MCL. I'll be back for pre-season if it goes down that route. And he was like, yeah, mate, still come in. So I've turned up to Surrey Sports Park in my brace, crutches, like making a good impression. It was just, and then it didn't materialise because I hadn't played enough rugby that year. Anyway, so signed for Ealing, and then, you know, it was good. I just needed to enjoy my rugby again. I'd had a few bad injuries and hadn't played, so I wanted a year where I'd enjoy it, and I did enjoy it. And, you know, a great bunch of lads there, but there was a lot of like amateur lads mixed with some professional lads. So, you know, we got caught up in, you know, really good team spirit and bonding and socials, and it was amazing. Like, but the rugby wasn't progressing how they'd like. And I remember halfway through the season, they were like, look, we're cutting that. That's not us anymore. You know, those boys that want to do that, you're probably not going to play. And we're going to progress with the boys that, you know, want to make this club grow. And I respect that. You know, I definitely enjoyed my first few months there, you know. But I also really serious on my rugby. So I played towards the end of the year, and there was an option for me to stay a second year, but Brian Redpath rang me literally 1st of January, which is the date you can then start speaking to clubs. And he was like, really keen. Do you want to come up and meet us? Ealing, you know, Ben Ward's quite shrewd, and he was a bit like, oh yeah, like, you know, we'll speak to you in a month. And, you know, it's just nothing certain in Championship rugby. So I ended up going to meet Leeds, loved it, met Jimmy. And that was the third time I think Jimmy tried to sign me when he was at Leeds. So he told me that straight away, which I already knew. So we had a bit of a laugh. And I knew Brian Redpath from when I was in Sale Jets.
Yeah.
He was playing. I remember training with him. I remember having to chase him around these cones at 16, 17. So I knew Brian pretty well. He knew my brother. And I just had a really good feeling for the club. And they were obviously top end, really good pedigree, great facilities. So I was like, yeah, this is amazing. So I signed there, and then I didn't, you know, Ealing never offered me anything until before the last game of the season. They rang me and asked if I wanted to sign a contract. And I was like, where was that 3 months ago? You know what I mean? So it's just, that's the championship. Happens like that.
It's cutthroat, isn't it? Professional sport, you know, it's like one person's opinion. They like you, they don't like you, you get injured. You've got to look after number one, which is you, right?
100%.
And you have to do that. And no one should have any opinion other than to support you in what you want to do, right? And that's what you've done. So you go to Yorkshire, have a couple of years in Yorkshire, play lots of championship rugby again, you know, right? You know, so yeah, which is like great, you know, which is you, and you've said like you've really enjoyed the environment there.
Yeah, I loved it there.
And then so you know, and then from there, though, you signed for Bath, which is like, you know, so having done well at Championship and not really had the opportunity in the Premiership, really through London Welsh, the couple of times we were there due to injury or whatever, you then signed for Bath. And you know, that seemed like, wow, you know, we were all thinking, that's brilliant for Alex, right? Thinking, but hang on a minute, like they got Reece Priest in there, Freddie Burns. It's quite a tough challenge for you, but you would have known that signing, wouldn't you, really?
Yeah, when, like, it was, you know, it was a bit of a surprise. I always still had ambitions to go up to the Prem. And the funny thing was, Leeds was on, after my first year, we'd had, you know, at Leeds, we got beat by London Irish in the final. And, you know, we lost a lot of boys like Joe Ford, Ryan Burrows, Jonah Holmes. Like, these boys are like big influence, big players, like, you know, definitely Premiership players. And they all left and we'd recruited pretty well, but, and we had this owner, some guys coming in saying they're going to put loads of money in, didn't materialise. The club, you know, we've all been there, haven't we? And then the club sort of like, the club then was like trying to offload players. And I'm like, oh, what's going on? Like, you know, I thought we were trying to invest and build again to go up because everyone wants to go up. And the club were like, look, I remember sitting down, like all the board and the players in the clubhouse and in the training facility. And they were like, look, we just need to consolidate this year. We know finances are tough. We just need to like pretty much stay in the league. Otherwise we're going to be struggling. And I remember standing up and being like, what the hell? How can you ask 45 competitive people just to consolidate when we put our bodies in the line? Like, what are we doing? You know, you're promising money here and these owners are coming in and now they're not. Like, what's going on? It ended up like, you know, boys were getting released, going on loan just to get them off the wage bill. And it just got to a point. I remember I just proposed to my wife out in Dubai, right? And then I came back fifth of January. And I went into Jimmy's office and I said, look, boy, what's going on? Are we, you know, before I went, or before, like a couple of months before Christmas, the club were talking about a 3-year deal and, you know, son, I was like, yeah, love it here. It's amazing. Want to stay. And then Jimmy, as I came in, I said, Jimmy, oh, you know, what's going on next year? And he's like, mate, we're not keeping you. We don't have the money and the club's in a bad way, so we can't keep you. And I really respected it because I had a great relationship with Jimmy, still do. One of my favourite coaches. And I always remember saying to him, I was like, okay, I'm absolutely devastated, Jim. I love it here. But please, can it not affect my selection? I understand if you're not keeping me, you might want to pick players that you're probably going to progress with, but I really want to play for you. And he picked me every week. It was amazing. It was sad to leave, but then, you know, I was then looking for another club and there wasn't much coming up. I'd spoke to London Scottish and out of the blue, between an old agent, you know, they were like, look, Bath are looking for like a cover at 9-10 and to bring some young guys through. And I was like, yeah, like obviously, I didn't think it would anything would come of it, and then met Todd Blackadder, Toby Boot, Darren Edwards, and they were pretty frank. They were like, "Look, how would you deal with not playing for a couple of months?" And you know, and I sort of knew that was my role then. That was going to be third choice unless Freddie or Reese's leg were hanging off. I wasn't going to play or injured, and I was like, "Okay, I can, you know, potentially do that. I can try and develop as a coach, learn as much as I can from the coaches." And I was always thinking post-rugby. And it was just tough. Right? It was really tough. Obviously, fantastic facilities. Playing with, like, you know, Anthony Watson, Toby Faletau, these boys are just Francois Lowe. I've just been watching these boys and, you know, train with them every day. And sort of like, was in Michelle. I didn't feel too comfortable being there, if I'm honest.
I tell you what, though, I'll tell you the effect you had at London Welsh, right? Because when you were playing Heineken Cup, right, for Bath, I think you were on the bench at first at Wasps. I got loads of text messages from Minnie's dads and youth dads saying that Alex is on the bench, and you come on then, and then you have a kick to win the game, I think, for Bath away.
This epitomizes my Bath career.
I know, but you know, unfortunately for someone who is very, very good at what they do, you just missed that one. And I think you may mention that's like a metaphor for your Bath career in a way. But pretty, it's a shame because much, you know, because you would have got it and you'd have been like, you know, folklore of Bath in a way. That's the game, though, isn't it? You focus on the process, not the outcome, Alex. Yeah,
correct. but yeah, it was. I just felt like a bit in my shell, and I didn't feel too comfortable being there, and you know, I wasn't playing. I wasn't like a first. It was just tough, and my confidence was really low, like really low. I was afraid to make mistakes in training. I'd start backing out of training, and it just wasn't me. I'd never been like that. Like normally at the forefront of things, doing it and showing and trying to be proactive, and I just struggled with the literally 6 months of no games, really. And then, and you know what? One of my best moments was we played Wasps again at home. I think the second to last game of the season. So I'd waited a long time, and I think Freddie went down with cramp 20 minutes to go, and we're losing 17-10 or 17-12. I get 20 minutes, which is like the most they've given me in the first team, really. I normally get 5-10 minutes or you know, I think to lose away, I played 30 seconds, you know. It's just like, so anyway, I get on and we score 3 tries. Bonus point, and it puts us in a really good position to go to Leicester the next week and get top 6, which the club obviously needs, you know, financial play in the big competition. And I had a really good game, and that was one of my proudest moments playing for Bath. Was I didn't do anything, I just stuck to the systems, but the boys around me were really comfortable with me being there, which was the best thing. And I got so many nice messages. Remember Jonathan Jones texted me after, was like, mate, amazing. You know, the backs coach rang me, and I just felt really good about it. And then I was meant to be in line. This is the funny thing. But then I was meant to be in line to play against Leicester next week. And then I trained all week at 10, and Freddie was struggling. I think Reese was already out injured. And I'd trained all week at 10, just before they were about to announce the team. Todd was like, oh, can I have a word? I'm like, oh, here we go. He's like, we're bringing Rocco onto the bench. And I was like, yeah. And he's like, yeah, so we're going to start Freddie, and Rocco's going to take a bench spot, so you're not involved. And that was that.
It's no wonder, like, you know, to be a professional sportsman at that top level, which you were at a Premiership, but you felt like sort of, you know, it's hard to fit in, you know, at that level, you know, and you felt at some point in that seat you weren't good enough with the Bath players, but you were, because you delivered on the pitch for them in that game. But yeah, I think it's mentally a tough thing to get to, you know, to be comfortable in that environment.
I think so. And it wasn't anything that the boys were doing, because the boys were amazing. It was my own fault. I couldn't, like, you know, have that drive in me for some reason. I don't know. I felt I wasn't good enough to be there, which was real shame. And I probably look back and think I wasted it. But either way, I wouldn't have got picked, because Freddie and Reese were both injured at one point, and they brought someone back in to play, and I didn't even play. So James Wilson came back in, who'd left the year before, and he was still around Bath, but hadn't got a club, so they brought him back in. He played then, like, started like 6 games. I still wasn't on the pitch. So,
yeah,
you know, it's just, probably just didn't trust me. Coaches probably didn't trust me to play. So that's how it goes sometimes.
I mean, what do they know, Alex? What they look anyway, you're in the bosom of one of your good mates now, Jonathan Mills at Rossin Park. And, you know, look, National One is not happening this season. It'll happen from September, hopefully, next season. And you get to play regular then at National One. And then, you know, who knows, you may come back and play for London Welsh when you're 39, 40 or something. But look, a lot of your mates call you Welly, right? Where does that nickname come from?
Because I've got, you know, obviously you've spoken about my kicking record. I can obviously kick a ball pretty far. So that's, no, it, basically Ed Jackson, the Muppet, where we were playing in those sevens at Twickenham. You know, used to do that at the Premiership Sevens, whatever it was, in my first year at London Welsh. And I think we had Gerard Mullen and Jacko and myself, Will Hurrell playing. A decent team. And, you know, Ed's only ever seen me, like, T-shirt. I've not moved in there yet. I've not moved into house of Ed. I've been living with my brother. I've only been, like, vest, T-shirt, shorts. And I think Ed's expecting me to be, because I'm quite small, to be, like, ripped and, you know, quite shredded, like, six-packed a lot. So when I got changed, I didn't. And he was like, bloody hell, you look like, you know, a welly. And I just then, I bit on it really hard as I did. And then it just sort of stuck. And then as soon as, like, the Welshies, like, Beachy and Powley get older, that was it. Saul Nelson, that was, like, that was it. That was game over. And it stuck. Still to this day, that's my name for the boys. So
you made that big mistake of biting on there, Mickey Taker, didn't you? But look, it's great to see you've seen so many friendships at London Welsh. And I love that you're all in touch to take the piss out of each other. That's great. That's what sport's about. I know it's about, you know, trophies, you say, but it's now it's about the mates you've made. So when you look back at your London Welsh career, because you played 119 games for London Welsh across 4 years. That's a lot of games, Alex, right? And you can tell by the way you talk about the club, you have some fond memories. But what does being part of London Welsh, what did it mean to you?
It means a hell of a lot. I'm really proud of that part of my career. And as you said, I've met some mates for life, which is the best thing about rugby. You know, I moved to Bath. I end up bumming into Saul Nelson. We end up coaching Old Reds for 2 years together. And I learned so much of Saul. I played with Saul at London Welsh. And, you know, if I had met Saul at, you know, London Welsh, I wouldn't have the opportunity to go and coach and get some experience at National 2 with Old Reds, which was amazing. So, you know, like, it was a lovely part of the world to live in. One of the best clubs for community, like, togetherness of in the bar with the fans after. You know, the fans are amazing. They travelled all over the place. You know, you've done it. There's loads of people. And my parents were in Jersey coming to watch us, bumped into London Welsh fans, going out a meal, beer with them. They'd meet them, the Welsh fans, on holiday, and they'd do the same. It's just amazing. Honestly, I'm not even joking. My dad would send me pictures. Do you know this guy? I was like, yeah, blah, blah, blah. He's like, London Welsh fan, blah, blah. And it's just, it was a nice, it was a really good connection with the fans. And it's like an old style, but it's sort of lost now in the game a little bit. Unless you're at, you know, I think Rosson Park's got a good feel to it, you know, around the very, like, buzzy, you know, they've got good facilities, the bar's there, they've got things going on. It's quite like that. But London Welsh means a lot. I've obviously won my two only trophies, got promoted twice to the Premiership, made my Prem debut. And I've got friends that I still speak to literally today, I speak to Seb Stegman and Milsey today. So that proves, you know, what an amazing club it was to build those memories.
No, brilliant stuff. Look, it's been great chatting to you and catching up with you. And, you know, it's been great talking about your career. I've learned quite a lot about you. I'm glad your coaching business is going to go from strength to strength, as will your Instagram TV appearances and the glitterati that will appear on there. But look, stay in touch with the club. We'd love to see you down there. You know, come and say hello when the season starts. And look after yourself. And thanks for your time, Alex.
No, Gareth, absolute pleasure, mate. I know I've been terrible at being in touch with this, so I do really appreciate you giving me another shot to come on here. And I really appreciate you, not just for this, but, you know, helping me when I was at London Welsh and with your boys, and it's great to see them doing so well now. So you do lots of good stuff for London Welsh, mate, and, you know, clubs at London Welsh need people like you, so well done, and thank you very much, mate.
That's great. Thank you. I'll pay you later. Cheers, Alex. Bye-bye.